The show is live and local. It's your connection to local music and more. And our concert, our program today will preview a lecture and concert that's going to happen next Sunday in Champaign at Faith United Methodist Church called Music and the Wesleys, which is also the title of a book, a new book edited by Nicholas Temperley and Stephen Banfield, published by the University of Illinois Press. And that's going to be the topic of our conversation today with Professor Temperley, who will be with us for the hour. We'll be talking about John and Charles and Samuel Sebastian, and both the religious connections from which it all stems, and then especially the music. It's live and local. Chances are you recognize that tune, which means that you know at least one hymn written by Charles Wesley. Of course, Hark the Herald Angels Sing. The tune is called Mendelssohn because it's written by Felix Mendelssohn, but the hymn, or the words, were written by Charles Wesley. The performance in this recording was given by the choir of Magdalen College, Oxford, and you heard it here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. And I played that because our hour is going to be spent with the music of the Wesleys, plural. And with us on the show to tell you what that means, more or less, is Nicholas Temperley, who is professor emeritus at the School of Music at the University of Illinois. He even has his own entry in the New Grove Dictionary of Music and Musicians, born in Beaconsfield, England, and has been a professor at the University of Illinois for a long time after various other appointments in England and the United States. And quoting from the New Grove, Temperley has done much to promote a reassessment of English 19th century music in its social and historical context, and unquoting there, as well as edited at least one opera, piano music, songs, liturgical pieces, including Haydn's Creation and Berlioz's The Symphonie Fantastique. He's also had involvement with various elements of American and Anglican music. And I've always been amazed by the number of times I've seen Professor Temperley's name attached to topics that are extremely diverse. And pleased to welcome him to the show today. Thanks for joining us.
Well, I'm happy to be here. And it's nice to hear Hark the Herald Angels Sing again in January. You don't often hear it in this month. But it's a good example of the way hymns and their tunes often come from completely different places. And actually, in this case, different periods. Of course, Charles Wesley was an 18th century figure. Mendelssohn didn't even overlap him in his life, and probably had no idea that his tune would have been used for this hymn. The tune was actually written for Mendelssohn's Festgesang to commemorate a poem that commemorated Gutenberg as the father of printing. And Gutenberg, dee 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 dee, they used to sing it that way. And of course, I don't think Mendelssohn had any idea that it would be used, but tunes can be used. You can get your tune from anywhere for a hymn. It's not like songs, which keep the same music usually throughout their lifetimes. And actually, the Wesleys were among the first to do this kind of thing, to find tunes from somewhere else and use them for their hymns.
Well, let's actually just address that the difference between a hymn and a hymn tune. I mentioned this to my choir yesterday, who all seemed to be pretty shocked that a hymn is not necessarily an intact entity as text and tune.
Well, I suppose it depends on the context. I mean, if you say people are singing a hymn, obviously it includes the verse and the tune, but if you're trying to discuss a hymn in more detail, you'd talk about the author of the words and the composer of the tune are quite very rarely would be the same person. And they may, as I said, come from quite different sources.
So technically speaking, the hymn is the words. Just yeah. like a carol mm-hmm. is a set of words.
Yes.
Whereas you have a carol tune, and then you have a hymn tune, and you can have many tunes to the same hymn, and you can have many hymns to the same tune.
Yes, that's right.
And I think you even have a demonstration of that coming up in a little bit. But let's talk about the first Wesleys who have been of significance to the church and to and eventually to music, but John and Charles, the brothers.
Yes. Well, John, of course, was the founder of Methodism, but he saw it as a movement. He never gave up. He was a priest, an ordained priest in the Church of England. He never gave that up and reaffirmed it on his deathbed that he was a member of the Church of England. But he was very critical of the current way the Church of England was going about things, and he especially thought, among other things, that the music had sort of fallen asleep and was boring, uninspired, and he wanted to do something about it. But he couldn't actually do very much about the music of the church because he was never given a parish. He criticized the church too much, and he became somebody that they didn't really want to see. He couldn't even preach. He wasn't allowed to preach in many churches of the Church of England because he seemed to be so hostile to the church. But as far as the music was concerned, one of the things he didn't like was that people sat and listened to choirs singing and didn't take part themselves. And he didn't like the kind of music that the choirs sang, which was often in counterpoint with, you know, different voices in the choir coming in at different times. And I'll quote, because it was a good example of his rather colorful language. "The repeating the same words so often, but especially while another repeats different words, the horrid abuse which runs through the modern church music, as it shocks common sense, so it necessarily brings in dead formality and has no more religion in it than a Lancashire hornpipe." I'm not quite sure what a Lancashire hornpipe was. It's both an instrument and a kind of dance, but that's really beside the point. But what he wanted was to have everybody in the church singing loudly and with heartily, or as he put it, lustily and with a good courage.
You showed me a set of rules that he wrote, made up for hymn singing.
Yes, that has become quite famous. When he finally decided what tunes he wanted people to sing, he published them in a book called Select Hymns with Tunes Annexed in 1761. And he put in a set of guidelines for how people should sing. And this made such a big impression that it's still found in the introduction to modern Methodist hymnals, including the one used at Faith United Methodist Church. And I have it in front of me now.
Why don't you give us a summary?
Yeah, the first one says, "Learn these tunes before you learn any others."
The ones he picked.
The ones he picked. He was quite a authoritarian. He knew best what people should do. Secondly, sing them exactly as they are printed here, without altering or mending them at all. If you've learnt them to sing them otherwise, unlearn it as soon as you can. Third, sing all. See that you join with the congregation as frequently as you can. Let not a slight degree of weakness or weariness hinder you. Number four, sing lustily and with a good courage. But number five, sing modestly. Do not bawl so as to be heard above or distinct from the rest of the congregation. Sing in time. Above all, sing spiritually. That just sums up his main points.
So, as you said, a bit of an autocrat, but he wasn't himself a musician.
No, he wasn't. And nor was his brother Charles, who some people think the greatest writer of hymns in the English language, but certainly John was very fortunate to have a brother who had these gifts which could be used to promote his ideas of the Methodist in the Methodist movement. But I do think there's a slight contradiction, which he never really realized. He had this idea that he knew what tunes to sing. to talk about, and perhaps he knew what tunes he wanted. Perhaps we can talk about that in a minute, but it wasn't necessarily the kind of music that the common people, agricultural laborers, mill workers, and so on, knew how to sing. Because his tastes were sophisticated, he was a well-educated man, and so on, and he chose tunes that what we might call classical variety.
So he was sort of, he wanted to get everybody involved, but he sort of made it difficult for people to get involved.
I think he did in the end, yes. Yeah.
And did Charles have similar feelings to John about how music should happen in the church?
Yes, he was very much a supporter of John. They disagreed on some matters. He also was an Anglican parson or priest, but he wrote, some people say, as many as 4,000 hymns, which have had a dominant effect on the Methodist movement. And I noticed that in the hymn book, that is hymnal that is used at Faith Church, that he is the author of far more hymns than anybody else that they have in their collection. And one of the most famous ones was called "Jesu, Lover of My Soul." Later, changed to "Jesus, Lover of My Soul." I think it might be interesting to play a couple of tunes from those that have been used with that hymn. One of them, the standard English tune written by a Victorian composer named John Backus Dykes. The other, what was until recently the standard American tune. So I think you've got those.
Yeah, I've got those queued up. And before we play them, they each have tune names. The tune names tend to be known often better than the person who actually wrote the tune. Where do the names come from? One is called Hollingside and the other Martin with a Y.
It's a long tradition of in England to give names to tunes, and the reason for that was that the tunes are, there were many, many English hymns are in the same metrical form of what is called common meter. And so you can easily sing them to many different tunes. It's not like the German hymns, like Ein fester Burg is always sung to the same tune. And so that becomes the name of the tune and as well as the name of the text. But it hasn't been like that in English history. That tunes and texts have, as I've already mentioned, have been sort of mixed and matched with each other. And one of the main tasks for the editor of a hymnal is to choose whether he's going to go on using the tune that has always been used with a certain hymn, or select another one from any place he wants. So to identify these tunes, you need a name, and they often are place names or their names. Sometimes you don't really know why they have these names. I have no idea why these particular tunes are called Hollingside and Martin.
Well, we're going to hear Hollingside. "Jesu, Lover of My Soul," set to Hollingside of John Backus Dykes. This is going to be sung by the choir of Selwyn College. And then "Jesus, Lover of My Soul," same words, one letter changed, to the tune called Martin. And that's going to be the song actually by the Chicago Symphony Chorus. It was part of a recording of symphonies of Charles Ives. Heard here on Live and Local as we talk with Nicholas Temperley, who is going to be giving a lecture on the topic of music and the Wesleys, along with a concert Sunday afternoon at 3 o'clock at Faith United Methodist Church in Champaign. So that is "Jesu, Lover of My Soul," set to the tune Hollingside with the choir of Selwyn College.
I think it's a very good tune, but it's not a tune that Wesley would have approved of because it depends so much on harmony. I mean, the main thing about it is the harmony. Wesley rather frowned on harmony. He wanted everybody to sing the tune together and without any harmony, without any accompaniment. And that's how it was done. We don't get recordings of this kind of thing. And the tune that he chose for that hymn is no longer in use, but I am going to have it performed at this event on Sunday.
Who's going to be doing the performing?
The chancel choir, as they call it, of Faith Church.
Charmian Bully
directing it, and Michael Hammer playing the organ.
And that'll be on Sunday afternoon
yes,
at 3.
Yes.
So he didn't even want an organ accompanying?
No, he didn't. Organs were not allowed in his at his meetings.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, that was... insisted on this, and they only gradually came in after his death in Methodist meetings.
So this next setting, I think you characterized as the one commonly sung in American churches.
Until recently, yes. It's rather dropped out lately.
And this is called Martin. Chicago Symphony Chorus, not usually singing hymns, but they did in the context of a recording of music of Charles Ives, because Ives made such prolific use of hymns in his instrumental works, and that was the tune, Martin, with the hymn, or the text, Jesus, Lover of My Soul, so the second of two settings of that same text that we've heard here on Live and Local today. Our program today is made possible in part by Krannert Center for the Performing Arts, featuring the City Company's performance of the Drama Desk Award-nominated play Death and the Plowman on Saturday, January 29th at 7:30 p.m. More information about upcoming events is at krannertcenter.com. Guest on the show today is Nicholas Temperley, Professor Emeritus at the University of Illinois. He has co-authored a new book called Music and the Wesleys, out from the University of Illinois Press, and it has many contributions by many different people and tries to explore the quoting from the book jacket, the conflicts faced by the Wesleys, but also celebrating their triumphs of various kinds. So we've heard a little bit about John and Charles, brothers, as founders of Methodist Church and their ideas on how music should be sung, John's especially, how music should be sung. But it was Charles who produced a couple of composing sons.
That's right, and it was... possibly a rather disagreeable surprise at first to find that his eldest son, Charles, was an extraordinary musical prodigy who could play tunes by ear correctly before he was 3 years old and things like that. Of course, this was a time when musical prodigies were rather fashionable, and the little boy Charles was about the same age as Mozart, the most famous of all, but every place in Europe was bringing out a whole series of these prodigies. Most of them are now forgotten. Mozart, of course, from what he achieved later, remains among the most famous of all composers. But there was prodigies represented what was natural, and this was a period of Rousseau's ideas about nature and how you should not trammel the natural people's natural gifts by forcing them in by education and so on, or any other kind of constraint to follow fashion. You should let natural gifts come out, and that's why people were so much attracted to prodigies. But this didn't sit altogether well with Charles Wesley's ideas, because he came from a puritanical idea about education, how you should kill the spirit. You should master the spirit of a child, and his mother had been particularly strong on this. She's still quite well known as an early educationist, where you should break the child's natural ideas, and so that they can live a a prosperous life in society. And so there was a certain amount of conflict here, and John Wesley did not approve of the idea of the two boys becoming professional musicians. 'Cause 9 years after Charles was born, his brother Samuel Wesley was an even more gifted musician. And their mother was probably responsible for, in their early years, for encouraging their music. She came from a very different sort of background, a gentry family, who were accustomed to the idea of music as a delightful occupation, and who went to concerts and operas and had music in their house and so on. And this side of things was a little bit in conflict with Charles and John's idea of what music was for and how it should be harnessed to for religious purposes and dedicated to God. So they were not so keen on secular music, as we might call it, or concert music, operas, and particularly things like dancing. They associated musicians with drinking and other things that the Methodists disapproved of. So this brought about a kind of conflict in the family, which is, in a way, the focus of this book.
And we have some samples that we're going to hear of music by Samuel Wesley. Why do we not have samples from Charles, the younger Charles?
Well, Samuel Wesley made a much bigger impression as a composer than Charles did, and Charles's music has only just recently been discovered. And one of the features of this book is the first catalog of Charles's compositions. And there's a very large number of them in many different forms, symphonies, concertos, secular songs, as well as religious music. And it's very difficult to come by any recordings of this music so far. I think in the next 10 or 20 years, quite a lot of this of his music will be performed, but I wasn't able to find anything suitable.
Charles's?
Of Charles. Samuel has always been, was a leading composer of his generation in England and a famous organist and pianist. And he was associated with the early revival of Bach's music and has always been recognized as quite an important figure in musical history. So there are plenty of recordings of his music.
I wouldn't say that we have plenty here, but we do have at least a couple, including one that has five symphonies on it. You picked one of these symphonies to give a couple examples.
Yes, this dates from 1802. It's obviously influenced by Haydn's symphonies. Haydn had visited London a few years before, and you can see some similarities, but Samuel Wesley always has some surprises in his music. He's very much his own man and doesn't just imitate. So let's hear the beginning of the first movement, can we?
Sure. And this is a performance by the London Mozart Players, speaking of prodigies, conducted by Matthias Baumert. That's a bit of the first movement of this Symphony in B-flat by Samuel Wesley with the London Mozart Players.
And I'd like to hear a little bit of the slow movement, which is remarkable because it is in three measure phrases, which almost the whole way through, which is makes it unique among classical symphonies and a very beautiful, expressive melody.
Some of the second movement of this B-flat symphony of Samuel Wesley here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. We're talking about music and the Wesleys, various Wesleys, and Samuel, the son of Charles, who was the brother of John, and Samuel also having a brother, Charles. Just to make things even more confusing, if you should happen to just see these names in an isolated context. But Samuel Wesley, the more well-known of the two composing sons of the elder Charles. And Nicholas Temperley is with us to talk about the Wesleys. And this is in advance of a lecture and concert that will be happening Sunday afternoon at 3 o'clock at Faith United Methodist Church in Champaign, also called Music and the Wesleys. So Samuel Wesley, what was his... was he well known as a composer in his day?
He was, yes. And but he had a series of breakdowns in a rather long life. He seems to have had what now would be called a bipolar condition. And there were times when he got hopelessly depressed and couldn't do anything. And then he had bursts of activity. And he also was a rather difficult personality, which I'm afraid was a characteristic of the whole family. But he didn't... easily follow in his father's footsteps, religiously speaking. And when he got interested in, he was very interested in old music. It was just beginning to be revived in England, sort of the beginning of what we, of the situation we're in now, where we are interested in the music of all periods of European culture. It was just beginning to come in, the idea of recovering old music. And he got very interested in pre-Reformation music, as a result of which he converted for a time to a Roman Catholic Church. But he soon got disgusted with that as well and gave that up. And as he got older, he began to see a lot more value of his father's ideas, and particularly his father's hymns. And this is a hymn, we're going to hear now a hymn by his father that he wrote in the form of a sacred song. This was not really church music. It might have been intended for performance at a in a devout domestic situation. "Might I in thy sight appear," words by Charles Wesley, music by his son Samuel.
And it's a performance by a group called Psalmody, with a group called the Parley of Instruments, directed by Peter Holman. Some of music by Samuel Wesley with text by Charles Wesley, his father, called "Might I in Thy Sight Appear," a sacred song, not what you would call a hymn, sung by a member of Psalmody with the Parley of Instruments, presumably Peter Holman at the organ, here on Live and Local. And he not only wrote vocal music that was of any sort of sacred sort, but also of the sort that Uncle John would have disapproved of, I presume, in the form of madrigals?
Yes, the madrigal was an example of reviving music of the past. Of course, the madrigal had its height in the 16th and 17th centuries, Elizabethan madrigals, as far as England was concerned. And a poet called Thomas Chatterton, who was another musical prodigy, roughly contemporary with Samuel Wesley, died at the age of 24. But he was he wrote what you might call fake Elizabethan poetry, and wrote the words of this, "O sing unto my roundelay," which Wesley then set to music. The Madrigal Society offered a prize for the best madrigal in 1 year, and Wesley didn't actually win the prize, but this was his entry to it. So it sounds like Elizabethan madrigals part of the way, but then suddenly you hear something that doesn't sound at all Elizabethan. So it's an interesting mixture of styles.
And this is a group called Invocation on Live and Local.
Oh, sing, oh, sing, oh, sing unto my roundelay.
It sounded almost like three completely different styles of music in one so-called madrigal. We heard Sing Until My Roundelay, music by Samuel Wesley, sung by Invocation, with forte pianist Timothy Roberts. I mean, that already in itself, I mean, madrigals weren't typically sung, at least in the Elizabethan madrigals, with a keyboard of any kind, or were they?
No, well, they could be, yes, they could have been. But no, this was the practice of the Madrigal Society, which was an 18th century London society that was concerned about both reviving madrigals of the past and reviving the tradition of performing them. And they were the ones who offered this prize, but they always used to do them with accompaniment.
Hmm. That was news to me. So what was the range of Samuel Wesley's musical writing? We've heard, you know, a couple of examples of vocal music plus a symphony. But did he ever do large-scale choral works or choral instrumental orchestral?
He wrote a large Roman mass, which he dedicated to the Pope during his Catholic period, and a lot of Roman Catholic Latin church music. He wrote English church music. He wrote, and he was a virtuoso pianist and was interested in writing piano music. There's a rondo based on the carol God Rest You Merry, played by Ian Hobson, which I think we're going to hear a little of. But before we do that, maybe I should just say that Samuel Wesley was not happily married, and he had his marriage broke up, and then he had a partnership with another woman, and their first son was Samuel Sebastian Wesley from the next generation. We're going to be talking about him later.
So when one sees A. Samuel Wesley as a composer of church music these days, it's more likely that it's Sebastian.
Yes, I think so, yeah.
Yeah. Mm. But here is Father Samuel for one last sample here on Live and Local, and this is Ian Hobson, as Nicholas said, from his series of recordings called The London Piano School. This is Volume 1, Samuel Wesley's Rondo on God Rest You Merry Gentlemen, or at least a part of it. Had a couple of goes through the tune in this rondo on God Rest You Merry, Gentlemen, by Samuel Wesley, performed by Ian Hobson here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. Our show is made possible with support from Columbia Street Roastery, roasting coffee daily at 24 East Columbia in Champaign, also offering a variety of tea and chai, open Monday through Friday from 9 a.m. to 5:15 p.m. and Saturday mornings from 9 to noon. More information is available at 352-9713. We're talking with Nicholas Temperley, Professor Emeritus at the University of Illinois, about music and the Wesleys. That's the name of both a lecture and concert, which will be happening Sunday afternoon at 3 o'clock at Faith United Methodist Church in Champaign with the Chancel Choir of Faith Church, led by Charmian Bully, 3 o'clock on the South Prospect Avenue, just south of Kirby, and a free program?
Yes.
And that's the name of a book that Professor Temperley has edited along with Stephen Banfield. The topics include Charles Wesley and the Music of Poetry, Methodist Anthems, the Music of Methodism in 19th Century America, and Style, Will, and the Environment, Three Composers at Odds with History. That's Mr. Banfield's, one of his contributions. Harmony and Discord in the Wesley Family Concert. So I guess we get a little bit of dirt in there as well. And lots and lots of other topics in that book available from the University of Illinois Press, recently published. So Samuel Sebastian Wesley, the son of Samuel, was he called Sebastian
Yes, he was known as Sebastian in the family, and of course he was born in 1810, which was at the height of his father's enthusiasm for J.S. Bach, and he was undoubtedly named after Bach. And many people think he surpassed his father as a composer. He certainly was the most important Victorian composer of church music in England, but he was quite eccentric and did not follow the traditions of the rather conservative traditions of cathedral music. But his life was spent in a series of cathedrals. He tended to have quarrels and rows with the authorities there and had to move on to somewhere else. And for a while he was at Leeds Parish Church. Otherwise, his life was spent in cathedral cities, which were rather remote from the from London and where all the action was taking place. So Sebastian Wesley became rather a loner in some ways, but he was strongly influenced, I think, by romantic ideas of music. And you can hear in his anthem, Wash Me Throughly, which we'll hear in a minute, a very strong chromaticism and other features of romantic music, which set him apart from the more conventional composers of cathedral music in his time.
It's a setting, a part of a couple of verses from Psalm 51. Here's the text, "Wash me throughly," or thoroughly, "from my wickedness, and forgive me all my sins, for I acknowledge my faults, and my sin is ever before me." This often gets sung at Lent, for probably obvious reasons, that that's the time that one beats one's breast.
It has a kind of agonized feeling, which is accentuated by the harmonies that Wesley used, often quite surprising ones.
It's the choir of Worcester Cathedral, conducted by Donald Hunt, in this performance on Live and Local. So we're into the repeated portion of the anthem, "Wash Me Throughly from My Wickedness," by Samuel Sebastian Wesley, choir of Worcester Cathedral, conducted by Donald Hunt, here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. And if you want to hear the entire anthem, you can go to the concert Sunday afternoon at 3 o'clock with the Chancel Choir of Faith United Methodist Church in Champaign, preceded by a lecture, or the lecture part sort of interspersed with the various
interspersed.
So rather like we're doing on the show here, I guess. Professor Nicholas Temperley, my guest on today's edition of the show, will be back tomorrow from 12 to 1, although I don't yet know who my guest is going to be, I have to say. We do have the Writer's Almanac coming up at a minute past 1 o'clock. If you're listening on 90.9 FM or 106.5, we'll go directly to classical music on 101.1 FM, and then on the other frequencies, join up with classical music starting at 106. So that was perhaps typical of one style of his anthem writing. There are many, many other beautiful and some quite dramatic anthems by Samuel Sebastian Wesley, but then he also had a lot of, or at least some, instrumental music.
Yes, he's really only known now for his church music, but he wrote in many other forms. And this is a powerful piece for the piano called A March and Rondo, which is probably appropriate as showing, giving some idea of the range of his composition, because this is very unlike what we've just heard.
Are there other, before we hear it, did Sebastian have any composing children or any children at all?
He had children, but none of them, he was the last, really, of the well-known Wesleys. None of his children got anywhere as musicians.
Unlike his namesake, Sebastian Bach,
right,
who had a whole bunch of them.
Yes.
Many of whom were involved in music, of course. Here's Ian Hobson. This is from Volume 3 of his series called The London Piano School. And March and Rondo will hear again the beginning of this on Live and Local. It's the opening march from the March and Rondo by Samuel Sebastian Wesley, played by Ian Hobson, who is a fellow professor at the University of Illinois here with Nicholas Temperley. I should say that Nicholas is emeritus professor now, and I recently learned that Professor Hobson will be officially retiring from full-time teaching at the end of this season.
Right.
But will be still sticking around as a part-time professor, at least part-time instructor of piano. Professor Temperley, it's a pleasure to have had you on the show today.
Well, I've enjoyed it.
It's sort of a fascinating topic with an... and there's many more stories that could be... You sort of hinted at in the difficulty of the personalities of all of these Wesleys that we talked about.
Yes, they really had to... They put a lot of people's backs up, but they often got their way in the end.
Will you be dishing out any of the dirt on Sunday lecture?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Mm. That always brings people in, you know.
Right.
Makes people interested. But it'll be all choral, no instrumental music on that program, with the Chancel Choir, Faith United Methodist Church, interspersed with Professor Temperley's commentary on music and the Wesleys, Sunday at 3.
Excuse me, there will be some instrumental music, yes.
Oh,
there'll be
good.
Organ voluntaries and piano.
Oh, good, excellent. Mm. So we haven't even covered the organ music, and that's by both Samuel and Sebastian?
No, this will be only Samuel. Michael Hammer will be playing one of Samuel's voluntaries.
Good, so a nicely varied program on Sunday as well. Free program, music and the Wesleys, and you can purchase the book through the University of Illinois Press. And that's recently out, co-edited by Nicholas Temperley and Stephen Banfield. You're listening to Live and Local on FM 90.9. Support for our show today comes in part from the Corkscrews Bouvon Wine Bar, 203 North Vine, Urbana, with a full list of wines from around the world by the glass and by the bottle. Wine tastings are held every Saturday from noon to 4. Information is at 217-337-7704 or on Facebook at Bouvon Wine Bar, B-U-V-O-N-S. This is Illinois Public Media, WYNL-FM and HD1 and HD2 Urbana, with translators W266 AF Urbana and W293 AF Danville. WYNL is a member-supported service of the College of Media at Illinois.